A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Dori Shafrir.
And I'm Kate Spencer.
But we're not experts.
We are just two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Isn't that the truth?
Isn't that the truth? You know, as we were saying that, I kind of felt like newscasters anchoring the nightly news. It'd be fun to read the opening in a very serious voice. Just food for thought.
All right, noted.
Well, friends, welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show,
Dori,
everyone.
Welcome to you.
And welcome to you.
How have you been?
You know, Kate, I have been pretty darn good. I'm not going to lie.
Don't lie.
My nausea seems to be completely gone.
Thank God.
I'm off Diclegis.
That's the anti-nausea medicine.
That is the anti-nausea medicine. I wouldn't say I've been sleeping great, but I've been sleeping okay.
All right.
I've been going back to Broadway dance class.
This is a big deal. When was the last time you had done it?
It was, I think, like late August. Because here's what happened. I found out I was pregnant. I went to Broadway dance class a couple times, and then I had some spotting.
Oh, and my doctor
was like, you need to take it easy. And I was like, okay. And then like a week later, I started getting sick. So I haven't gone for a really long time.
Now, did the class burst into dance when you walked into the room?
Kate, I'm not in the inner circle. Okay.
You're rotating.
But I did get a big hug from the instructor.
Who's a delight.
Joseph.
I mean, I don't know him, but.
Oh, he's such a delight. So it felt really good to be back. Also, something that helped was the routine that we did on the first day I was back was one that we had done a few months ago. So I was somewhat familiar with it.
Did you feel different dancing with your new form? Like, does your body feel a little bit different moving, or did it feel exactly
my
the
body
same?
Doesn't feel that different yet in that regard, because I'm not huge yet. I'm just sort of lumpy.
Okay.
You know, it's like I've just had a few too many burritos.
A burrito.
Go for a burrito.
That sounds good, doesn't it?
Also, I bought the 567 Broadway DVD.
So you can dance in your
house. So I will be dancing in my house as soon as that thing arrives. So that's been great.
That might also be a good, like, dipping your toe back after you have your child.
Totally.
When you might be really busy or needing to stay home with a newborn.
Yeah.
Just do a little dancing.
Just pop in that DVD and get to dancing. Put on my dancing shoes. Which are my sneakers.
And the nursing bra. Just go to town.
That sounds great. What else has been going on? Oh, my husband asked me if instead of giving gifts to each other this holiday season, we could paint and do a Christmas purge. And I said, what have you done? Who is this? And what have you done with my husband?
Forever 35 listener? That sounds like something we would be into.
I know. I was like, you're like speaking my language a little too much. Like what? Like I was like, what is happening?
Did he say this while like sheet masking and putting oil all over his face?
He was in a bath. No, he texted it to me and I was And I was like, I mean, even if part of his motivation for doing this is that he doesn't have time or motivation to go Christmas shopping, I don't care.
No.
It also like lets me off the hook. And doing a purge is like my dream.
What a present.
I mean,
that sounds great.
So I'm really excited about that. I've been influenced by, there have been several threads in the Facebook group, and we've talked about this on the podcast too, about Christmas traditions, especially when, you know, you don't have kids or you don't have a partner or something like that. And in the Facebook group, someone said that they always make cinnamon rolls on Christmas.
Sounds so tasty.
And I was like, that's perfect. So I texted my husband because we never see each other in person anymore.
You're both very busy.
And I was like, let's make cinnamon rolls on Christmas. And he was like, sure. So I think that that could be a fun thing that we do. I also, like, someone in the Facebook group also said that if you do something twice, it's a tradition.
I love this advice. Try something out. We've talked a lot about like establishing holiday traditions on the show in the past month or so. And like, yes, I agree. Try stuff out. And if you do it again,
then it's a tradition.
Yeah.
And if you don't, who cares?
Yeah.
So I'm into that.
I am too.
I've been lighting Hanukkah candles.
Love that.
As have you.
I have too. You can see the menorah behind you.
It's very cute.
Thank you. My children went to a Jewish preschool, so they still like to light the Hanukkah candles.
I love that.
Yeah.
Also, my husband and I had a good conversation about money.
Which is that's a huge gift.
Which,
what a present.
Like, never happens. It started because I read an article on The Cut about financial cheating. And I was like, oh.
What's that mean?
It basically means like when you do stuff with money and you don't tell your partner.
Oh.
That's kind of the crux of
it. Big things or anything.
And then there are a lot of like permutations of it.
I'm gonna read that.
But apparently in this article, one person went so far as to declare bankruptcy without telling their spouse.
Okay.
So, you know, there's degrees of it.
Sure.
But, you know, I think hiding purchases from your spouse or not telling them, or being in credit card debt and not telling them, or, you know, just like stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I sent it to Matt. I don't think he financially cheats on me, but he definitely, like, there's some gray areas, let's say. And he read it and was like, well, according to this article, I'm not financially cheating. And I was like, okay. But we had at one point had this rule that, like, if either one of us wanted to make a purchase of above a certain amount, that we would tell each other first.
Okay.
And I was like, I'd like to bring that rule back. And then I also said, maybe for the rest of the month, we can not buy anything except necessities.
And that went over well.
And he said, okay. He's in this interesting zone where, like, I mean, I think he always like wants me to be happy and wants to make me happy. But I think like he does respond well when I'm like, hey, this is a thing that really bothers me. Like, can we think about a way to fix it?
Which is amazing because not everybody responds well to that kind of like direct communication.
No,
I don't think I would.
I mean, I think it's maybe taken us a little while to get here.
Sure.
But yeah, his response, I mean, we'll see how it plays out, but his response was immediate, like, and he responded immediately and was like, yeah. And then we talked about it later in person when we saw each other for the, you know, 45 minutes a day that we see each other. And I was just like, yeah, like, this is a thing that makes me feel like unmoored. If I find out after the fact that you've bought something expensive, like a guitar.
Yeah. I think communicating on that front is really helpful. Then you at least feel like you are involved. It doesn't feel like a big shock.
Totally. And I was like, I don't want to like veto your purchases, but I just want to be aware.
Sure.
And I also think it helps to like take a beat when you're thinking about buying something and say, okay, I need to text Dory about this. Like, is this something I really want? You know? Mm-hmm. And he admitted that it had already helped because he was thinking about buying an amp. Does he need another amp? No. But he was like, but then I was like, oh, I have to text Dory. And then he just decided not to buy it. And I was like, yes.
Oh my gosh. Where are you going to put an amp?
Thank you, Kate.
Anyway. You want me to come over and just chime in? I'll just hide in a corner of your house and just pipe up.
That would be amazing.
Where's that amp going to go, Matt?
Anyway, what's been going on with you?
Well, Dory, about a week ago, I posed a question to the Forever 35 Facebook group. I popped in.
You don't always pop in.
No, I tend to avoid almost all Facebook interaction. And I'm not on Twitter anymore. I've kind of tried to give myself, although Instagram, I'm just living my life. Really big over on Instagram.
I'm into it.
But I've had to kind of cut down on social media for my own mental health. But I have been having back pain. Mm. And I knew there was one place I could go for help. And boy, did the Facebook group deliver.
I mean, I think I saw your post when it had been up for like 20 minutes and there were like 100 comments
already. It was
really
amazing. And you know, a lot of the suggestions were repetitive because there are some things that really work for a lot of people, which was just nice to see. Like, oh, wow, look, a lot of people use acupuncture for their back pain. Because I love acupuncture, but I had never even thought about that as a choice to help with my back. So I received hundreds of comments with really concrete, helpful advice. I then, speaking of purchasing things, went a little nuts.
Okay. I would categorize these as necessities, though.
My husband is like, what are all these things? Because I bought a full-size body pillow.
Uh-huh.
I bought a bolster for my legs for when I sleep on my back. I bought a Spunk acupressure mat. That someone in the group said Jackie Johnson had recommended over on Natch Butte.
Okay.
And it turns out Jackie and I have the same acupuncturist. So, which I also started going to acupuncture. So I asked my acupuncturist about the Spunk match because I said Jackie had recommended it anyway. And that's supposed to kind of help just bring blood to the area. So I've gone to acupuncture. I've gotten cupping.
Whoa.
Done cupping for the first time. Okay. A couple times. I got a neuromuscular massage. I take Pilates, which was a big suggestion. I do go to Pilates, but I'm just trying to up it a little bit more. I've been using a heating pad. I did an Epsom salt bath. I'm trying to be more regular with that. I bought a pinky ball, which is like a Pilates ball that I've been rolling around on. I bought a new foam roller.
How is all this stuff going?
It's working. And listeners also suggested, number one, like go to the doctor.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I have an understanding of what my back pain is. It's not like a slipped disc. I think it's my SI.
What's SI?
I think it's like, it's basically kind of part of my hip. I'm going to say this and it's going to be wrong. And like a physical therapist is going to write us and be like, no, but it's my lower back on the left side and my left hip are just kind of really tight. And also I've been stretching more, just really been helping, and I'm taking it easy at my boot camp. I'm not going crazy because I know I have injured myself exercising in the past and I don't want to repeat. And my boot camp leader is a really wonderful trainer who welcomes modifications. So thank you, listeners. I'm working on my back.
That's great.
Yeah. It's, you know, it hurts, but I felt like I was like, oh, I have this incredible group of knowledgeable people who have really great thoughts and feedback and advice. So thank you, members of the Forever 35 Facebook group, who came to my rescue.
That's amazing.
And Dory, I also wanted to mention that after our gift guide episode, we received a couple of emails from teachers.
Yes.
Who thankfully chimed in with what they think other teachers would like. And their advice was no Starbucks gift cards.
Yeah, that was so interesting. We heard from different teachers, and they all said the same thing.
I'm sorry. And I want to apologize to my kids' teachers.
Well, I mean, you know. Yeah.
Anyway, I really was so grateful these teachers wrote in. So thank you, teachers. I have to say, like, I value my children's teachers so much. I only want to do things that will be helpful to them and get them things that they will really use. So, One person said, what we'd love is something that expresses gratitude for us as individuals. So their suggestion was like, if you know that the teacher loves makeup, get them a Sephora gift card. If you know they, you know, like new shoes or need some new shoes, get something, a Nordstrom gift card, let's say. And then another teacher recommended personalized gifts. They said that they like candles, lotion, or Amex, Visa, MasterCard gift cards, which you can use anywhere, or like a grocery store gift card, like maybe Whole Foods or maybe Target, mm-hmm. something like that. And then this teacher also said, if families do not have the means to purchase anything, we also really love homemade cards, homemade snacks, or a simple holiday email is perfect, which is great.
Yeah.
And so these emails from these teachers inspired me to get a more personalized gift this year.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So hopefully the two teachers at our elementary school, I hope it's okay, but I'm excited to, I actually felt it was really fun. It was, yeah. They're more personalized and I'm excited to give them to them. And I think my kids will be excited.
Oh, how fun.
So thank you for that, listeners. That was really, really helpful feedback. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So other than that, Dory, I'm just gearing up for my daughter's birthday and I'm going to be crafting Harry Potter wands until the big day.
I'm so excited for you.
I did show you the beginning stages of the Harry Potter wands.
And they look great.
I hate crafting, but something about the fact that I was able to do this, all I did was glue a gem onto a chopstick.
Where did you get the idea?
I Googled DIY Harry Potter wand.
Ooh,
crafts.
Smart.
And I watched a 12-minute video,
mm-hmm.
and they made it look manageable. And then I tried it with a glue gun that I have, and it was okay. So they're going to paint the wands.
That's so fun.
You know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
I can't wait to hear how it goes.
Oh, thank you. I can't wait for I love my daughter, but birthday parties stress me out.
I hear you.
For me, for kids, for my husband, anytime I have to throw a party, I have anxiety about it. So almost done.
Yeah.
On that note.
Yeah. Let's take a short break.
Let's take a break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code Forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. Enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. Sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift. All while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups still without the underwire to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
So Kate, today we wanted to talk about winter clothing wants versus needs, kind of in honor of our guest.
Yeah. And also in honor of the fact that we want things that we might
only
not need.
Human. yeah.
Clothes
and things.
Consumption. A conundrum.
A consumption conundrum.
Kind of, you know, consumption conundrum. That's the title of this episode.
We just nailed it.
Nailed it. Yeah, I have been feeling a consumption conundrum.
You're wearing a lovely fleece shawl.
Well, I will tell you, this is from Patagonia, which a company I've mentioned before. I think I've mentioned that I worked for them many years ago, and I'm still very loyal to them. They're a fantastic company. And they have a program called Worn Wear, where they will sell used Patagonia clothes. So I purchased this. I think it's like a cloak. It's a shawl or a cloak. Mm-hmm, they don't make it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of had my eye on it for years and always wanted it. And I found it on their Worn Wear site. I was looking all over like eBay and looking on Poshmark, and Patagonia had one for sale. It's used, but it's in great condition.
Yeah.
And so that kind of helped my conundrum, just knowing I wasn't buying something new. But I still am. Basically, about a year ago, I purged my closet. I donated a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
I really stripped down what I owned, and it felt great. And then since then, I've just built it back up.
Mm.
And that doesn't feel good. And
yeah.
So I'm kind of examining, like, what, like, when I go to buy something, what's going on with me emotionally?
Mm.
Like, do I really need it?
Your shopping mostly happen online?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And part of that is because I'm tall and I need tall
size
clothes, which is never available in a store. And I also am a size 11 shoe, which is hard to find in stores. But like, for example, sometimes I'm motivated just by like, it's a sale, so this makes sense. When it really, then I'm like, I didn't really need this or want this.
Yeah.
Like I just did that.
Yeah.
I just bought these sneakers that were not the ones I'm wearing, but these $20 sneakers because J. Crew was having like a Black Friday sale. And then I got the sneakers and I was like, I only was motivated because they like the fact that I just saw $20 made me buy them.
Yeah.
I'm returning them.
Yeah.
They're fine, but they're not as comfortable as I'd hoped.
Right.
So I've just been kind of like thinking about how I spend
mm-hmm.
and what I want versus like what I actually really need, and then like, why am I motivated to buy things? Yeah, know, that's where I am. This cloak that I bought, I have been wearing every day. It's kind of the perfect Los Angeles winter wear.
It is.
It's been really great. So that has been...
You'll have to post a picture of it.
I will, friends. That's been a logical purchase.
Yes.
But then I make a lot of illogical purchases. But anyway, we're talking about winter clothes. So this shawl does kind of check off a box.
Yeah, I mean... It's a little weird for us to be talking about winter clothes because we live in LA.
Yeah, I mean, hell, this is LOL.
And the coldest it gets here is like at night. Sometimes it gets into the upper 40s.
I kind of can get into the 30s.
Not down here. Maybe in the valley.
Maybe where I am over.
Yeah. Over the hill.
Over the hill. Yeah, but it still is not. It's not.
It's not winter.
No.
Per
like
se.
We know many of you are really dealing with actual cold.
Yeah. So,
weather.
You know, I'm. This is like the first winter that I don't think I'm going back to the East Coast at all.
Me neither.
But historically I have at least a couple times in the winter. And last year I realized I needed a new winter coat because the winter coat I had been wearing was one I had purchased when I still lived in New York. So it was from like 2012. So it was like 5 years old last year, which... You know, if I still lived in New York, it would have been threadbare at that point. Mm. But because I live here, I hadn't really worn it that much.
So what does a winter coat mean to you? Are you talking like a full head to toe puffer? Or do you mean
talking,
a cute wool pea coat?
I'm talking like more cute wool pea coat okay. type. But I had like a toggle coat that was really cute.
Love a toggle coat.
Yeah. But it had gotten kind of threadbare actually and like looked worn and it was a little tight. And I was like, you know what? I need a new coat. I'm going to get a new coat this year. And so I started really looking around. I found one on sale after Christmas at Mansur Gabriel. I was like, ooh, this is going to be the coat I buy. And I ordered it. And I'm glad I double checked that it was returnable because I got it and it was so ugly.
Oh.
Yeah, I was shocked. Like it was supposed to be oversized, but it was oversized in a way that was like... insane. I really looked like a clown, which was not a look I was going for.
Not right now.
So I returned it and then I was looking on the RealReal and I found a great coat on there that was like not expensive. It's a thick wool coat. I've worn it a bunch of times.
And you use a thick wool coat here in California?
Occasionally. Like at night when it gets really cold.
I need to invest in a thick wool.
I no longer have like a really heavy kind of puffer coat. What I have is a coat I bought before we went on our honeymoon because we were going to Iceland and London in October. And Iceland in October is like by LA standards is like pretty chilly. By Iceland standards, it's not that cold.
It's but mild.
It was like in the 40s and like a little rainy. And I thought London would be rainy. So I bought this coat that was kind of, it's kind of thin, but it's waterproof. And then it has a, like a shearling lining, not real shearling, but like, you know, like a fuzzy lining.
Sure.
And it was great for the trip. It had a hood. It was long. I wear it here and it's great. So, you know, in terms of like coats, I don't really feel compelled to buy any more coats. And I was just going to say, when you brought up sales, I think I've talked about this before, but I really feel like sales can be a trap.
I think they are.
And I have shifted my mindset about sales to only buy stuff on sale that I've already had my eye on.
Mm.
No more like... Not perusing the sale. You know, around Black Friday, like I got some emails from some... you know, small brands that I really like that never go on sale that were like 20% off. And I did look and I was like, you know what? None of this stuff is stuff that I've been coveting. Would I wear it a few times? Probably, but I'm not like in love with anything. Whereas I think like a year or two ago, I would have been like, well, I better buy this jumpsuit.
That's how I still am. I still have that panic feeling.
Yeah. So it's hard to break that feeling, but one of the things that has helped me is making a Pinterest board of things that I want.
One thing I need to do a ton more like thinking and reading on it. But one thing I have started to kind of think about is what companies do I want to, like, my money is an investment into a company.
Yeah, totally.
Like, for example, Patagonia, a company I worked for, I know that they, you know, they treat their employees well. They have really wonderful benefits. They have childcare. They give back to, you know, they donate a ton of money to environmental causes, including like 1% of all their earnings. So I feel like I'm investing money when I spend money there into a company that I know is like going out into the world and doing good things with the money mm-hmm. I give them. So that feels like money well spent.
Right.
I need to apply that ideally because I also am in a place where I can apply that. Like
yeah.
It's a privilege to be able to do that.
Right.
I want to do that more.
I mean, I think that's also why buying secondhand appeals to me so much, because those are clothes that someone, if they weren't selling them, was probably going to throw away or donate somewhere that was probably going to throw them away. And there's tons of reading you can do about, you know, donating your clothes and where they end up. But you know, again, that's why I feel like if there's fast fashion things you want, try to find them secondhand.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
You know, like I kind of feel like when I buy stuff new, I do try to buy stuff that is ethically made, sustainably sourced, etc. I don't succeed all the time, but I try. When I'm buying secondhand, I kind of feel like those rules go out the window, because already by buying secondhand, I'm kind of already being more kind of environmentally conscious.
Yeah.
So just putting that out there.
I agree.
You know?
Well, luckily, our guest today is an expert on this topic.
Yeah, I'm so excited to talk to her.
Total inspiration. So let's take a quick break.
Yeah, and then we will hear from her.
Our guest today is Natalie Harris. Natalie, welcome to Vera 35.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We are thrilled you're here. I'm going to read a quick bio about you. Natalie Harris is the founder and designer behind the clothing line The Tiny Closet, which she hand makes here in Los Angeles. Natalie began The Tiny Closet in 2011 as a style blog after losing her job led her to focus on cutting back on spending on clothes and streamlining her wardrobe. Her clothing line, which she started in 2016, is a seasonal capsule collection of apparel and is available on her website, thetinyclosetshop.com. And I'm obsessed with it and want
thank you.
All of it, which is why we've asked you to come. This is a secret ploy to get clothes. And we're thrilled that you're here.
Thank you
so much for coming. Yeah. So Natalie, as mentioned, I love the clothes, which you share on Instagram.
Thank you.
But I would love to kind of know your origin story, how you began blogging and thinking about fashion, and if that was always your goal to begin designing your own clothes, or if it's something that kind of happened organically as you began to explore this idea of paring down your wardrobe.
Yeah. The second one, actually, I fell into it ass backward,
but the best way
into my closet. So it happened organically. As far as the, like starting the blog, I got laid off. A very good paying job laid me off, and I had some bad habits with shopping. I mean, I shopped probably every day, and I don't even know how someone could do that now, but it was a reality for me. And so I would just go out after work. I lived in downtown. I worked in downtown, so walking to my house, I was always seeing clothes, the new things in the stores. And it got to be to the point where I would go into a store and they had held things for me when Whoa. They got new stuff in.
VIP customer.
I've never heard of a store doing that. That's genuinely impressive.
Anthropology, you know, Free People, Nordstrom, J. Crew. It was just ridiculous. But yeah, so I got laid off and I realized I didn't have a savings at all and I was in debt. So I thought, okay, well, I can't go shopping. That's a no-go at all. Absolutely out of the question. And I had to start paying off my debt. I was dating a guy at the time and I didn't want to look, you know, like a mess, ridiculous with debt and not a job. So I concentrated on paying it off. and dealing with the things that I had in my closet. And I had a lot of things in my closet. I had maybe over 100 pairs of shoes.
Wow.
I mean, I had a whole section of my closet dedicated to just cardigans that I didn't even wear. Some of them had price tags on them. So I basically just wore everything in my closet for an entire year. And then after that, I didn't really have an interest in shopping. And I still had debt to pay off. And I was kind of like in that mode of like, oh, cool. I ran a mile. I'm going to run 2 miles. I'm going to run 3 miles. So I decided, okay, let's just wear one black dress for 6 months. And so I just started getting really creative with personal style, not concentrating on the clothes, but more on the person wearing the clothes. I mean, it really got deep.
Yeah.
And like kind of philosophical and finding myself, finding my personal style. I realized that like 75% of my closet, I didn't like. I didn't like any of it. It didn't look very good on me. I just realized salespeople were telling me that it looked good. So I was like, okay, I'm going to wear it. And then I would see other people wearing it. So it was like the thing to wear. So I really had no identity when it came to clothing and what I liked and what I wanted to exude personal style wise. So long story short, it was just like a really long journey of not thinking about clothes and more thinking about what I could do with these clothes, with my creativity and my personal style. And the less you have, it gets more creative. So
what did you do with the clothes you didn't want anymore?
The clothes I didn't want, I gave to a lot of friends. And then I also donated them. I have to say, this is so bad because I talk about sustainable clothing and consumerism, but I burned some of them.
Wow.
Kind of a spiritual thing, like, I don't want these anymore. And I never did that again. But
what a release, though.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. And it was kind of a promise to myself, like, no, I'm not going to do this again. This really got me in a rut. And it also helped me find a job that I liked. Because when I was finding out what I liked clothing wise, I was also going places I wanted to go and being around people I wanted to be with. It was really interesting kind of phasing stuff out of your closet and also phasing stuff out of your life. Mm-hmm. So
what field had you been working in when you got laid off?
Sales.
Okay.
So I realized that I'm really not good at sales. I'm more good at customer service. Or I shouldn't say that. I excel at customer service. It's not a natural thing for me to sell to someone, especially if I'm kind of getting out of that phase of buying and having people buy and like encouraging people to buy. So in every aspect of my life, I just minimized things and got more focused.
How do you sustain that? Because I think what happens, I know from my own personal experience, I'll purge and I'll be like, I'm going to wear these 10 things. And then over the year, I accumulate again.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like it really is a change that's coming from the inside, like an actual shift in your relationship with yourself, really.
Sure. I think that the change has to really be of value. I think a lot of people, they tie trends to purging and minimalism, and they're mistaking the aesthetic and the kind of like that, those fun challenges to a lifestyle. And it doesn't have to be that way. It's kind of like, it's like weight loss. You know, every weight loss program works, but does it work for you? And is the change, you know, valuable to you? Has something inside of you felt like, okay, no, this is how I want to operate now? So for me to stick to it, it was mainly freedom and the feeling of being unburdened. I really just loved that feeling. A cluttered closet is kind of like I don't know, a symbol of a cluttered mind, maybe indecision, not knowing what you like, not knowing what you want. And I really didn't want to have that in my life anymore. So that's what kept the clutter out. I mean, granted, when I started making money again, I really did want some things that I didn't need. Like I got a hat that was like probably a yard long over my head. And I bought it. And then I talked about it because I was like, okay, no, I'm going to be real with this. I bought a hat that I don't need. And I think I called it frivolity or something. You know, it was just a frivolous purchase. And I knew I wasn't going to wear it too long. But I was aware of it. And just being aware of what you're doing is actually very freeing. So you can still kind of dabble in you know, not mindless consumerism, but in that kind of like consumerism of, I really like this right now and I really want it, so I'm going to buy it and that's okay. And kind of knowing what you're going to do with it later, mm-hmm. that's helpful, why you want it. So just mindful purchases. It doesn't mean that you never purchase anything. It's really a personal thing. So,
and did it result in you eventually paying off your debt and kind of having clarity with your finances as well?
Yes. Yes. It, I paid off my debt and I bought an entire closet. No, I'm joking. I didn't buy a wardrobe, but, after that I thought I'm going to only buy things that, that really, really, really mattered to me. So if it's a $300 pair of shoes, so be it. I love it. I'm going to wear them. And they matter to me. And if it's a $2 hat, same thing. So after that, I mean, I kind of evolved into more sustainable purchases that would last me longer, purchases that were well made, from factories that I kind of did some research about. I stopped buying fast fashion, because it's just kind of the leading cause of a lot of pollution. Mm-hmm. I mean, fashion is just horrible. There's no unions or anything. I mean, no one has representation. So I didn't want to be a part of that. So I just kind of pared down things that just didn't make any sense to me that I didn't want to be contributing to.
So when did the tiny closet kind of evolve? Oops, sorry. When and how did the tiny closet kind of evolve out of there?
So I realized that I had very expensive taste. And
I get that.
Yeah. So and after I decided that I wouldn't buy from fast fashion, I didn't really like anything that were in the stores, and I didn't want to pay $300 for a t-shirt. I think that that's absolutely ridiculous, and it doesn't need to be that way. And now that I'm actually in the retail industry or in the fashion industry, I know it's totally ridiculous. I mean, it truly is ridiculous.
So it's just all markup.
You're paying someone's rent. When you're buying a $300 t-shirt, you're paying someone's rent. So that's what that is. And if you're okay with that, that's fine. But yeah, I just couldn't do it and I didn't want to do it. So I started sewing my own clothes. And
was that something you already knew how to do?
I did. Yeah. Not to the point of what I'm doing now where I'm like sewing like 60 dresses a month. But I just started sewing like small things, like a skirt here or a top or a dress. And then I started giving them away because I was making too much. And that actually started a whole nother category of like over sewing. So now I had a huge closet of all the stuff that I'd sewn, which is supposed to, you know, make a lot of be of a lot of value. But it was more like, no, I'm being a craftsperson and I'm kind of, oh, I want to sew this, so I will. And I'll only wear it 3 times or 4 times. Oh, I want to sew this, so I will.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so then it became another kind of issue of, now I've got more clutter, but I really don't want to give these away or donate them because I made them. And so I gave them to my friends, and then more people would ask me to make them stuff, and so I would. And I got a job at a restaurant, and I would wear all my stuff at the restaurant. And customers, like diners at the restaurant, would ask me where I got it, and then they would give me their number and I would make them things.
Wow.
So that's how it started. I literally had no interest or desire to have a clothing line. But people were just asking me to do it. So,
and then what made you kind of take the next step to formalize it?
There was no formalizing. I thought to myself, okay, you have a blog. If you can get 1,000 people on a mailing list for a clothing line, then open the clothing line. And I thought that's going to take forever. No one's really going to be that interested. People say they'll be interested, but who's going to really subscribe? And I got over 2,000 subscribers in like maybe a summer. And I thought, well, shit, I'm going to have to, excuse me.
Oh yeah, you can swear here.
I'm going to have to open the clothing line. And I really didn't want to. I thought, well, what am I going to do? And it was keeping me up at night. And finally, I just decided to do it. I kind of whipped up a website on Squarespace, and yay Squarespace. and then I went for it. I made it out of thin air. I didn't have any money. I had like $50 and 10 yards of fabric.
Wow.
And I just opened it because I'm like, okay, fine, you want it, fine, here it is. And I sold out, which doesn't mean too much because I had only 10 yards of fabric, but I sold out in a day, and then I had to buy more fabric. And that's literally how it started. I was just buying fabric and making clothes. It was very simple. And
you're doing it all yourself.
Yes. Yeah. And I thought, okay, I could do this. I could make like 2 garments a day, 3 garments a day. This is a great living. And I was overblown with people being interested in my pieces. And then I started kind of getting creative, like, oh, what am I going to get this season? What am I going to make this season? And before I knew it, it was a full-blown business. And then I had to deal with all the legal stuff. And like, people were coming in being like, okay, you've got to start managing the accounting stuff. And it was, I didn't even know what I had gotten myself into. So,
you literally fell ass backwards into this business.
Exactly. There were some times where I would, and this is where I realized customer service was really huge for me, because I think it's the best thing in the world for a business to have. I just can't go back on anything that I say. So it got to the point where I was so busy that I'd be taking pieces that I had sewn for myself that I'd never worn, and I would ship them to customers because I didn't want them waiting, or I had ran out of fabric and there was no other fabric to use, and I didn't want to call them and say, hey, you bought this dress, but I don't have the fabric anymore. Wow. So I would literally be like, okay, fine.
Get like, off the shirt off your back.
Exactly. Wow. So yeah, and that's how it started. And it's I don't even know.
But is that still how you're doing things? Are you still the sole creator of everything?
Yeah.
Do you have any employees?
I do not. Wow. My husband would be like, hey, I do all your photos. I wouldn't think of him as an employee. He's a partner, definitely. And he does all my photos. I model the clothes, and I do have several other models that I work with. I'm still flying by the seat of my pants. So a lot of times I still do the modeling and it's.
And how many new pieces, like a season, do you design?
I don't know. It depends on how much time I have. It depends on how long I've thought about it. It also depends on how much fabric I have in it, because I only buy dead stock. I don't pay a mill or anything like that. And I thought about it, because you definitely can plan better when you mm-hmm. have a mill and you have a schedule. Dead stock is just stuff that comes off of other stores that they're done with. Oh my gosh, you guys, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, thousands upon hundreds of thousands of fabric is just left after a season.
Wow.
Hundreds of thousands of yards of fabric, I should say. And
what usually happens to that fabric?
Landfill. So it's like a kill shelter. It's like, oh my God, these beautiful fabrics. What are you going to do with these fabrics? They're like, oh, they're going to go to a landfill after this. So it's like, you know, I buy as much as I can afford of really, really beautiful fabrics that you can't get anywhere else, literally, because that's all there is. Mm-hmm. And that's how my clothing line exists. So,
And do you purposefully choose the prices on your pieces to be reasonably priced? Because that's what stood out to me, is that it seems like, and I might be wrong, but nothing's over $200.
Yes. Yeah, that was definitely deliberate. There was one dress that I put in the time and energy, and I was like, you know what? This dress is amazing, and you can wear it almost every season. This is going to be $245. And when I release something, it usually sells out in a day. And it didn't sell out at all. I mean, it didn't, no one bought it really. So I put out another newsletter saying, hey guys, do you like the dress? It was more like, I really believe that this dress is worth $245, but at the end of the day, I'm here for you, you know, and I love you guys. You guys put me in business and love my pieces. So I'm going to take it down to $175, I think it was. And then it sold out. So oh, it was wow. Like, okay, so that's what it is.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of taking a hit, because it's like, well, I'm the designer and I designed this myself and I'm sewing this all myself and I'm doing it, I'm shipping it myself. But so I did make some cuts with other things. So it's always kind of like a Tetris game of like finding my value, knowing that value, being comfortable with what I'm receiving back, like my ROI, and knowing that my customers are also very happy. So I make sure that nothing is really over 200 unless it's like a coat. Unless it's like from Africa, which I do have a couple of like African coats. And it's like, okay, you guys, a plane shipped this here to me. So.
Right. There is some, you do have to kind of make your investments back in order to be sustainable.
Exactly. Yeah.
And do you have advice for people, I guess, who first want to do what you did and whittle down their what's in their closet? Like, what is a system to accomplish that? And then also people who are interested in beginning to explore sustainable fashion but may not have a limitless budget.
Like I do?
Yeah, because I think that's one of the biggest hurdles when we've talked about sustainable fashion, is that a lot of times it's really pricey and you want to invest in these things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the convenience of a Target or an Old Navy.
Yes.
You know, which I admittedly love both of those places for clothes. It's very tempting, and it's hard. You know, everybody's trying to save money and, like you said, pay off debt. So anyway, mm-hmm. That's a long-winded question, but I'm curious if you have learned anything to offer.
Yeah.
Listeners.
I think that, first of all, the reason why fast fashion places are in business is because life is just... is because life. it's like maternity and oh, I need a job. Oh, I lost my job. Oh, I'm going camping. Oh, I'm going to Paris and I spent all my money on Paris, but I need clothes for Paris. So you know, they're there for, it's like, hey, we're here. It's like a convenience store. It's around the corner. You go in, and unlike a convenience store, everything is actually cheaper than an actual store. So understanding why fast fashion is there can makes it easier to understand where you stand. So I think you just need to plan better. There are things that happen, life, like, you know, you get that job that you always wanted, or you need a job and you get it that day and you need a white shirt all of a sudden. I understand that. But it just forces me to plan more, because when I find an urge to go to Zara or to go to H&M, it is because something is happening last minute, usually. Not because I can't afford something else. It's usually because it's last minute. And so I would say planning is key, and that's hard. I mean, it's not a fun tip, but it's real with my experience. And then also you know, clothing that's handmade by the designer or sustainable clothing, I think that just needs to evolve. There needs to be more businesses like mine. Not that I'm tooting my own horn, but there just needs to be more businesses like mine. There needs to be smaller businesses. I would say large clothing companies have the hardest time meeting their bottom line, kind of skirting that, okay, well, how much is too much and how cheap can we get this for? So just smaller businesses, more individual designers putting out clothing lines, which there are. So just a little bit more research. I'd also suggest Etsy. Etsy is just like an endless well of amazing creatives that make clothing that is affordable. So like food and all that, it's easier to go down the street to Jack in the Box than, you know, look online and see, oh, what new restaurants just opened that are really, really good with, you know, vegan or vegetarian options or nutritional, you know, options that are better for me. It takes time and, you know, planning and research. So I hate to say that. I have some better, more fun tips, but as far as that goes.
But it does take work. I mean, that's what I've had a hard time realizing is it does take research and thoughtfulness and making mistakes. And sure. Yeah, it's a process. It's not something one figures out immediately. I mean, you've been now doing this for almost 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. So, and just kind of thinking through like the idiosyncrasies and like the channel of my thoughts. Why am I here? Why am I standing in front of these $20 shoes? Or, you know, why am I at Target just kind of wandering the aisles when I was here to get a filter for my air? Like
that so. Target trap is,
man, oh
it is
gosh.
Real.
It is so real.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article. And I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping, and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. I have some gorgeous planters. And then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs.
Oh.
Including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. And you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Can I read a quote that you wrote on your blog about self-care?
Sure.
That really resonated with me. You have a whole post called Self-Care for Dummies, and I'm not going to read the entire excerpt that I pulled, but and you're writing about some of the practices that you did, but what you've realized is this: the stuff that really makes a difference, and part of the reason I suppose I can call myself a minimalist, is the real self-care, the hard stuff. Congratulating, forgiving, listening, letting go, feeling, that's the real stuff. They're not events or things to own. They're everyday life changers. I mean, a face mask and a trip to a day spa can only take you so far.
True. Yeah.
And I would love to know kind of how you've come to your own philosophy about self-care, because we talk about all this stuff on the podcast a lot. And I think what we've learned in the year or so of doing this is like the masks are fun, but really it's like the hard self-work that is the true self-care.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. I think stress just looks really bad on people. I would say women, but I'll just say people. Just stress looks bad on people. No, you know, no water, no eating, forced dieting, all of that stuff, working too hard, waiting for that right moment. It's never going to come. So I would love it for it to be products. There's miracle products out there. They say they're going to, you know, do all these things, but it's really at the end of the day, it is slowing down and making sure that you're doing what you want to do and you're walking in your purpose, basically. Mm. I think that that's the best feeling in the world. I noticed this because I was going online before I would go to bed, and I would just obsess, like online, just browsing. And one day I just asked myself, like, why are you doing this so much? I actually think my husband asked me, he's like, what are you looking for? And I was like, I don't know.
Oh gosh, what a question.
Yeah. It's like, what are you looking for? Because I was pinning all these things, and I thought, I don't know. And then I thought, you know what? Like, okay, so this face mask has, you know, carotene or like collagen or this or that, but I can really just, I can drink that stuff or I can eat it, and it's so much better for me. And I started just thinking about all the things that I could do instead of buying something. So it was really coming from a consumer standpoint, like not buying, what could I do instead? So I joined a gym and I drank more water, and it just got so more such just simpler. And it was guilt free too, because I always feel like if I'm putting something in my cart and I feel like a little tug of like, I shouldn't, I don't know, should I? Or I pause, then it's like, no, get rid of it. Get it out of your cart, get away from the computer, stand up, do some stretches, do something, just get away from it. So yeah, that's where it's coming from. It's more the real stuff. And it also came from my mother, who, it's just old school advice, getting enough sleep, drinking enough water, exercising. It's old school that everybody's kind of like, oh, well, you know, but you should try this. This actually really works. And it's, you know, if you have to buy something to look better or feel better, I just don't believe in it.
Natalie, where can our listeners find you and find your clothes?
Ooh, okay. Well, I'm on Instagram mainly, under the Tiny Closet. That's my URL, or that's my handle. And my shop is thetinyclosetshop.com. And that's pretty much it. Actually, I do have a Facebook page that I was kind of forced to start, but I don't really know what to do with it. So Instagram, and then my shop, and then also The Tiny Closet is my blog, where you'll find all my, you know, archived, my journey to be where I am today. So
cool.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Natalie.
Thank
this
you.
Is so fun.
Awesome
this
to have
awesome.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, Dory, last week you committed to making progress on a writing project.
I did.
Well, you didn't specify writing project.
Oh, I didn't?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
Well,
it's a writing
spoiler
project,
alert.
Everyone. Yeah, so I sent some stuff to my agent.
Wee.
She read it.
Ooh.
She liked it.
Oh my gosh, this all happened fast.
She's quick. And she asked me to write kind of an introduction to the stuff I had sent her.
Fantastic.
And I wrote it. And wow. She sent me some notes that I haven't looked at yet, but she was like, I have very minimal notes. And she wants to send it out in January.
So you had an incredibly productive intention this week.
I did.
You really set it and then you...
I forgot it. No, just kidding.
You executed it.
I did. I executed it. It finally felt like the time was right. This is some stuff that I've been working on and off for over a year.
Yeah.
And there have been like months where I didn't look at anything. And I was like, okay, I'm ready. So feels good.
Well done.
Thanks.
This week I committed to working on my sleep shit.
How'd that go?
Terrible.
Oh no.
Still, here's a question I have for you. I don't think you do this. One thing I do, and I'm kind of doing it in all aspects of my life, is like I get annoyed at my like best practices and I rebel. I don't know if you do this, but like,
interesting.
I'm not washing my face at night right now.
Okay.
I'm like, I haven't been doing my gratitude practice.
All right.
Although today I did look at the sky and I was like, I'm grateful. But I haven't, I've kind of been blowing off all my things that I lean on to kind of keep my life in order. Yeah. And my sleep is,
where is the self-sabotage coming from, Kate Spencer?
But here's the deal. This is what I was thinking last night. I was kind of like, you know what? This is just where you're at. I'm not going to shame myself for it or make myself feel bad just these weeks, I'm just rolling into bed at midnight.
Okay.
And I'm having a hard time. Like, that's just where I'm at.
Okay.
I don't know if it's self-sabotage or if it's just...
I only said self-sabotage because it sounded like you were upset about it.
I was. And then I've kind of have come to a place where I'm like, this is just what I can do right now. That's fine. It doesn't mean it's lost forever.
Yeah.
Just, you know, life is cyclical. So I'm just, you know, last night I was in bed a little bit earlier than normal. I am reading a book on back pain. I did make myself read a couple pages of my back book. And I'm just going to, you know, keep at it.
Okay.
Anyway, I'll update you next
week. What's your intention for next week?
Well, it's kind of an immediate intention.
Okay.
I am hosting some kids for my daughter's birthday, a small group. My daughter is an introvert and doesn't like, you know, she's not a big group child. She's a small group child. So we're doing a very intimate thing. And I have hosting anxiety where I like fret that no one's having fun and everything is terrible. And I do this with adults and now I'm starting to like project it onto children. So I just got to shut that down and just let go and have fun and enjoy myself and not worry about, you know, people pleasing children. My fear of disappointing adults has now manifested into children because that's who I'm around now. So I'm just going to try to like not be uptight, not be anxious, not be a stress ball. Just roll with it.
Roll with it.
And, you know,
whatever happens, happens.
Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, I am ready. You know, I've passed the 20-week mark in my pregnancy.
I know. It's such a big deal.
It's a big deal. And like, I don't think I'll ever be able to like fully relax, but I'm ready to just like enjoy my pregnancy. I'm feeling good, not nauseous. I'm not exhausted anymore because I'm off the freaking diclegis that makes you drowsy. Feel like myself. I'm ready to just like be like, hell yeah.
You're ready to party.
I'm ready to party with my fetus.
The two of you are going out on the town.
Yeah.
And do you feel like the reason, I don't want to make assumptions, but you aren't able to relax or haven't been able to relax is just because you went through so many challenges to get pregnant.
Correct.
And also because there is the sensation that it could all change.
Yes. I went through so much to get here and I had such a crappy first trimester.
Yeah.
And in part because of the other podcasts that I do, I feel like I've heard every permutation of every horrible story that has ever happened to anyone. You know, we're talking stillbirths. We're talking, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just like all the things.
Yeah, hard things.
And so even though I know that those, the possibility of those things happening is very, very small, they still happen.
Yeah, they do.
And so it's hard to get like completely out of those, get those things, get those completely out of my head. But I'm trying not to let them like consume my thoughts
and actually enjoy this experience.
Yeah, and just kind of like relax and enjoy it and embrace it. So that is my intention.
I love it.
Thank you.
I mean, and that can really be an intention for the next week, but also the next 20 to 21 weeks or less.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm, well, friends, we're here.
We are here.
We're at the end of this journey.
Indeed.
If you ever want to call us and leave us a voicemail, our phone number is 781-591-0390. And our email is forever35podcast@gmail.com.
And you can join our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/forever35podcast. There's a thread the other day where someone was asking a question about working at a nonprofit, and someone said, come join us in Forever 35, like nonprofit workers. And they were like, wow, there really is a spinoff group for everything. And like, it's true.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah. So come on over,
so
everyone.
Shout out to the nonprofit workers community. And if you enjoy our show, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, tell a friend, and if you really like us, you know, give us a shout out on social media.
And also, all the products that we mention are always on our website, forever35podcast.com. And you can follow us on Instagram at forever35podcast and on Twitter at forever35pod.
Please don't forget that Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Dori Shafrir and Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio.
Bye, everyone.